Alrighty, we're back here in the Money Matters Show. As I said, we have a guest today. His name is Mike Hammond. We're going to talk about real estate. He's the CEO and president of PICOR, which is locally owned and operated. And he's been doing this since 1985. So we obviously have seen the ups and downs of the real estate market for the last, I guess, what is that, 25, 22, 23 years?
Yeah, I actually started in 1978. But the company started in 1985.
Great. Well, I appreciate you joining us and talk about it. So why don't you give a little bit of background first, Mike, of your company and how many people you got and all that stuff and what you guys try to attempt to do, and then we'll go from there.
Well, Cushman Wakefield PICOR is a strictly commercial company. We do retail, office, industrial, property management, apartments. We started in 1985, grew from a small group to now we number, I guess our total employment is somewhere around 45. We've got 18 brokers and 7 property managers.
So I look back at the markets from the 80s to where we are now. I remember every downturn like it was yesterday, and all the upturns are just like, oh, okay, they happened. Do you view real estate kind of same way? Because obviously the early 90s wasn't a lot of fun either.
Yeah, it's been an interesting ride. I never thought I'd see the late 80s and early 90s again, and to see them so quickly starting in, 2008 was a – although the 1999 to 2001 era was pretty much a real estate recession. I don't think the rest of the economy saw it. You know, the RTC days, the implosion of the savings and loans, that was pretty much a real estate-driven recession. This last one was obviously deeper and broader, which kept us kind of in the doldrums for a lot longer than I would care to go through again.
So what's your assessment? Where do we sit right now?
Well, we're definitely coming out of it. Our worst year as a company was the last half of 08. We had a record first half of 08 on the upside and a record last half of 08 on the downside. It just absolutely collapsed in July of 08, our business, the commercial business. And 09, 10, 11, 12, very, very marginal improvements, but improvements. 12, the last half of 12 really took off. We had a very large fourth quarter. And it was consistent with what went on around the country. It was we're definitely broadly out of this real estate portion of the commercial recession.
What is taking off? When you say it took off,
we had a lot of overheating in our market, and that probably started after the recession of 2001. And came back slowly and then just absolutely built up into an overheated situation up until 06, 07. And it just had to pull back. And when you couple that with the global recession, just some of the things that happened nationally and internationally, it was a scenario for an absolute collapse of our market. And it did. We didn't make it the last 5 years on the income side. We made it on the expense side. We really had to cut back on our expenses, basically the backs of my salespeople.
Okay, but when we say it's coming back, you're talking about people buying stuff or the pricing coming back? Because obviously with the collapse, you know, it all starts with businesses not being able to pay their rents. People can't pay their rents. The values of the buildings go down. Then if they have too much debt on the buildings, which we've been talking about a lot of debt today, then they turn it back to the banks because they can't pay for it. Now it comes out of bankruptcy at much cheaper written down prices.
Yeah, there's a couple of ways that question could be addressed. Certainly, when I say coming back, I mean our business, which means there's very good value out there on properties taken back by lending institutions from basically collapsed investors or collapsed companies. So the pricing of real estate, commercial real estate right now, although it's come back maybe 20-25%, is a real good buy. And there's a lot of cash in the market for that kind of buyer. But the small business, we manage probably maybe 1.5 million square feet of 1,000 and 2,000 and 3,000 square foot spaces, which are small businesses. We saw 2-3 years ago, you know, requests for lower rents, requests for to get out of leases, total bankruptcies and vacancies. That has stabilized. The small businesses that we manage today are healthier, they're better managed, their expenses are much more contained, and they they are tending to now look more to the future. So that is even starting to come back. But our business sees the comeback first. The trades in our business, like architects, engineers, you know, they see it a little bit later, but they're starting to see it also. The attorneys that handle rezonings, for example, of land, they're telling me that they're starting to see a pretty strong uptick in their business, which bodes well for the construction industry down the road.
What was interesting about this last downturn in commercial, the people that had, like, say, Class B, Class C type properties, that rents were reasonably cheap, you know what I mean, like, say, $1,000 or $800, they thought they were pretty much recession-proof because it wasn't a high rent each month. But with the collapse of so many small businesses, they're the ones that got really hurt because then they couldn't even get anybody in there because the small businesses couldn't even afford $500, $1,000, $1,500 a month to pay for the rent.
Yeah, you'll see in deep recessions, actually, the quality tenants that might be in a C or B location can actually move up to an A location for the same price. So you'll see a comeback usually in the A market first because they're really where everybody wants to be if they can't afford it. The B and C market, especially in office, is a little more problematic because there's a lot of functional obsolescence, a lot of re-tenanting costs, a lot of landlords that really can't afford to spend the money to upgrade their office buildings. So the B and C office space especially is really problematic right now.
So do we have a lot of – what do we have most of in Tucson? A's or B's? Let's do this. Let's go back. Explain to everyone what a Class A or Class B type property is.
Well, a Class A would be like anything you'll find in Williams Center or in some of the high rises downtown along Sunrise, some of the North Oracle stuff. And there's pockets of A buildings that might be in B or C locations. But it's just a high quality, high visibility kind of situation that, you know, every top company that can afford it would like to be in. B and C are good properties. They're just not in that category. A C property, in fact, my best definition of an A property is one I can buy and sell at a profit. I mean, everybody's got a kind of a different take on that A, B, and C, and there's some very good owners that invest in C properties, but they just don't have the location or maybe they were built in the 50s or 60s and really need a lot
facelift
of renovation. Yeah, or don't have parking up to code, ceiling heights in industrial space, loading areas, you know, those kinds of things.
Do you see, like we've seen in the residential real estate market, a lot of investors come in and buy up properties from the banks at the foreclosures and then go and fix them up and turn them around or use them as rentals? Do you have that same type of cash flow on the commercial side from investors? See that?
That's a good question. I think the one-word answer is no. Most of the distressed real estate that we've seen is probably being purchased by users that are doing well and want a good buy on a real. They may be renting now and can now afford to buy because in some cases, if you've got the cash, you can buy a building and at a lower cost than you can rent it.
Right.
So I would say no.
So not a lot of it's more.
They're there, but not like the volume of Wall Street money that I hear is in like Phoenix buying up distressed homes and those sorts of things.
Well, they're doing that because obviously there's no place to get income now, so they buy these houses and rent them out. Whatever they're getting is a higher percentage they would than if they were just getting, putting it into bonds or anything. So
and they're at such
distressed
sense. Prices, and then their cash flow of corporations is so
and
big.
It's setting up a whole other business, which is leasing them out and managing them and bringing in the income from them. But, probably as interest rates, the markets come back and they can sell them off down the road, it's going to be a nice overall return to this money that they had nothing going on with it.
Yeah, those big purchases in the residential arena had very little risk. The banks were letting them go at prices they could rent them and make a good return. You could not go out and buy a new home or build a new home, but you could buy a distressed property and rent it out not more than the market, but at market, and you obtain a good rate of return. So, and if you've seen, although we're not talking about residential, the 20-25% increase in the last year, these folks that bought a year ago can sell today and make a nice return.
And the biggest problem that I see, though, it's hurt all the other individuals that are just trying to hold on to the houses. Because as you and I know, Mike, someone will have a house and they have a mortgage on it. These houses came down because these big guys are buying cheap prices and they're using those for appraisals. When they did all that, and that's fine to do it, there should have been a law that says don't go by the appraisals that you're getting from these group purchases. You got to go on appraisals of things that are selling as from individuals to individuals that are not coming out of bankruptcy, because it's hurt banks, which we know. It's hurt individuals that want to sell their houses. It's brought the prices of everything down, and it's put people in a difficult situation because they can't get their mortgages redone if they're in a situation where they don't have the equity in there.
But isn't it unfair on the flip side? All of our values went up from people that were buying the homes that couldn't afford to have them in the first place either. If you go back to the mid-2000s, our home prices went up so much because our neighbors were able to get a loan with no money down. The qualifications for that loan were so minimal, so it pushed our prices up while they were able to get that loan and shouldn't have ever had it. So now they're
But it wasn't not institutions buying groups. What I'm saying is would go off
But they're buying them because the people can't
Right, but go off the prices of individuals that are selling and buying homes. Those are the appraisals that got to be used. Not when you go in and you can buy, $100 million worth of houses in the portfolio. You're going to get that cheaper. That's wholesale prices.
Can that even be extracted out of? Because they buy them as these huge baskets.
Exactly. Well, extract it out.
So then you
about
say, okay,
do appraisal.
This one on this house, this street hey. Has this one, this street has that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, they know where they come from.
Yeah, I think I just heard last week that like 40% of all the residences getting purchased right now are for cash. Because the appraisals will not appraisers by profession deal in comparables, which means yesterday's news. So they're usually behind the market in an increasing value market and ahead of it in a decreasing. And so they're certainly behind the market now because values are increasing dramatically. So if you're going to buy a house, you got to put a lot of cash into it because you're right, Dean. The
right.
appraisal will not support what you're paying for, but you're still getting a very good buy.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So you need cash. So the only people that are benefiting
are the ones
with all the cash, and it goes against everything that they're trying to do right now. And then they come up with the law. Well, if you can't afford the house and you got to walk away, you can't come after them.
Well, if you look at the history of transfer of wealth, the Great Depression transferred a ton of money to those with cash. So did the recession of the late 1990s and early 2000s, and it's happening now. Folks with cash can come in and take advantage of very, very low prices and then hang on to it for 4 or 5 years in the market. Everything, construction, all the way down to engineers
Absolutely.
And designers do not recover until they can go out and build something at a market rate. And right now, when you can buy something at 40% of a market price for new construction, you can sell it at 80% or 90% and still make a lot of money. So the construction trades, one of the reasons they're lagging so much is there's just so much inexpensive rentals, whether it be commercial or residential, on the market right now.
So I wanted to ask about that on construction. So you're not seeing a lot of movement yet on new build. Right now there's still – the movement is to take up supply that's out there.
Yeah, there's virtually no new construction going on in the commercial arena. Some companies that are doing well are expanding or can build for their own account. For reasons that they need, they need to build new, are building, but nothing of any significance is going on commercial and new, as far as new construction, no speculative.
Which makes it hard still. The construction industry is just not recovering. You still hear from companies that they are in construction, whether you're steel, whether you're, whatever area of construction that is just not.
You know, I got to tell you that my residential friends, though, there's a lot of pressure building up because there hasn't been a new lot platted in 5, 6, 7 years, and so there's a lot of absorption that's gone on in those years, even though it's been low. And the lot, I'm told that there's a shortage developing of lots to build homes on.
Residential,
but the commercial sector is the one that does that platting, does the infrastructure, puts the roads in. And ultimately sells the lots to the builder. And that trade is coming back. Now, how fast? I think I just heard the other day we pulled, 2,200 permits last year, which was twice the year before. But our peak was 12,000. And a healthy a number of residential permits, new constructions, about 8 or 9.
But let's face it, when that happens and there's not a lot of brand new stuff, then good neighborhoods start getting a facelift, where people will go in there and buy these cheap, you know, the houses at a cheaper price than they can do, and they rebuild them or remodel them in the nice neighborhoods.
Yeah,
and that's something that has to continue always, because if you don't, then those neighborhoods fall apart and everyone moves someplace else.
Our construction industry, you know, make no mistake about it, residential drives the construction industry, not the commercial. And the flight of trades, south, north, east, and west, was so great during that recession that I am hearing that there are construction trades that cannot hire right now. So the demand is coming back. You're going to see construction employment increase, I think, dramatically this year. And again, that's one of the reasons why I'm fairly bullish on except for some of the national things you talked about in your earlier part of the program, Dean. I think Arizona has reset and is coming back, except maybe in the government job sector, government employment.
Well, I'll tell you, you see that Miami is going crazy with these condos. You know, they fell down. Vegas is coming back. Arizona's coming back. If you look at those three, which were at the bottom of the barrel there, the only place I'd be looking at is Arizona. All right? Maybe some Nevada, but they have a tendency of overbuilding tremendously, but they get people in there, you know, because they don't have to pay the taxes. I wouldn't be buying condos in Miami, that's for sure. I mean, it goes away like that. I mean, we saw that happen before.
Well, if you want to talk about Miami a bit, I just got back from there about 3 weeks ago, and I will tell you, that is the center of Latin America for the United States, and it is absolutely booming right now. So whether that will continue, because Latin America, by the way, is pretty stable as an economic force right now. So that may or may not be true. I was there in Miami a number of years ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago, where you could have bought a million-dollar condo on right on the beach for $250,000, but, you know, you were taking a big risk then.
That's the way we could solve our budget. Let's sell Miami to the Latin America and bring in all those hundreds of billions of dollars and reduce our debt. Annex them.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
Well, you know, when you talk about the new construction on real estate, that's the business that my husband's in. And, you know, I think the biggest difference that you're seeing, and they're selling their homes before they build them, and they're doing spec homes. And they're on the higher end. You know, they're in that kind of $800 to $1 million range homes. What the difference is, they had land that they had to sit on because they had bought it prior to 08, 07. They've just been sitting, and they're finally able to start developing. But what they're seeing is people want, if you can buy a home that might need some fixing up in that range, or you can go buy a new home, have everything, you know, brand new for you in a good new neighborhood, that they are seeing them. That they're just reducing how much they're doing at any one time.
All right.
A couple homes at a time rather than 100.
We'll be right back. 880-5678, 880-KNST. If you have any questions for Mike, real estate, give us a call. All right, we're back on the Money Matters Show. We're talking about commercial real estate. 880-5678, 880-KNST. We're with Mike Hammond.
I'd like to talk about lending.
You just cut me off.
I thought you were taking a break.
No. I was introducing who Mike was.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't even do it. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, go ahead.
Who is he?
No. Go back. Finish up, and then I'll come back in.
See, it's hard, Mike, because I'm being pregnant and stuff. If I come down on too hard, she'll start crying, and then I feel really bad.
I know the
Mike
Hammond, spot here.
CEO, president of PICOR. He's been doing it since 1985 at his own business since the 70s. Seen it all. Up and down in Tucson. So 880-5678. Go ahead now.
All I was saying was lending. Can companies get financing in this market? Because that's a big issue on the residential side. Can they get financing to purchase these properties? How tough?
Well, you know, that's a question probably Dean could answer too, but because we both sit on the same board of a bank. But lending is there's a lot of cash in the market. For a couple of reasons, the burden on a borrower right now is, we talked about this earlier, dealing with the appraisals. The appraisals are again coming in based on comparables from yesterday, and selling prices have gone beyond any kind of appraisal database. So the appraisals come in low. And if you buy something for $1 million and your appraiser appraises it at 850, you've got to make that difference in cash. And also the banks are saying, okay, we will loan, maybe in the past, to an owner-occupant, they might loan 90% of that appraised value. Now they're probably closer to 65 or 60%. So you put the 60% on the $850,000, you end up having to put 50% cash in. So not many small businesses can do that. And so there is a demand, I think, to buy real estate, but it's very difficult to get a loan.
Yeah, and it goes back to what we were saying before. You know, the government agencies that watch over the banks, especially smaller banks, are saying, especially in Arizona, you got too much real estate. We don't want you giving out loans in real estate. Well, now's the time you should be giving out loans in real estate. And so what it does, it just allows the big venture capital funds and the big insurance companies and the ones with all the capital to go ahead and buy up this real estate, and doesn't give anyone else an opportunity to go do it. Because banks are not, no matter how good your credit is, banks right now are being told that they have too much concentration in real estate.
You know, one area, I would agree with you, Dean, but one area that small businesses should look at is the SBA 7A program or the SBA 504 program, which does allow them to get 90% financing. And that is a program that more small businesses should be aware of and take advantage of.
What's the let's go back to the commercial real estate in Tucson. What's the most expensive building in Tucson?
The most expensive building in Tucson. You know, short answer is I don't know for sure, but my guess is it would be a medical building that's highly facilitized with doctors in it that are probably paying a good rent. And remember, value is strictly a function of income. And so the Class A properties
Well, I meant for rent. If somebody wants to rent a building.
That's a good question. Probably, well, you saw the article about the new building going up downtown maybe mm-hmm. last week. But you can probably build a building right now in the office market and rent it out for $26, $27 per square foot.
Triple net?
Well, depending on how much you paid for the land. Right. If you paid a lot for the land, no, it could be. That would be triple net.
Right.
Some other locations you could probably build maybe a class B, B plus.
Explain that to the average person, what it means, modified gross and triple net, because mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people understand that.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's kind of a buzzword in our industry. If I were a renter, I'd always want to know what the full service rate is if I'm leasing office space, which includes your real estate taxes, your building insurance, your other expenses of sometimes even water, electricity, certainly common area maintenance and that sort of thing. Triple net means that's the money the owner of the building takes and you pay all the other expenses associated with the building. So whether it's triple net or full service or modified gross, which is in between those two extremes, is a very important question.
And I think people don't realize that. They'll see somebody they get $18 a square foot versus someone with $23 a square foot. And they're saying, why are we so high? But that 18 is triple net, which can bring them up to $30, $35 a square foot or more because, you know, income is going, you know, the taxes go up, the maintenance goes up, everything goes up and it gets passes on. And everyone's like, oh, my God, look how high these CAM charges are. Look how high everything else is. And it becomes a problem if people don't understand that when they're getting into the leases.
You know, absolutely. We're talking per year rates per right. year, and probably the average office charges over and above the triple net are $8, $8.50 per square foot per year. There are some buildings that are higher than that.
Right, and it's something that people have to take in consideration because that's the number that goes up. Plus, their rent will go up a little bit too. And then, of course, when things are bad, then you got to renegotiate and all this other stuff. And when things are good, they try to renegotiate. And it's been pretty tough. It's been challenging over the last, 5, 6, 8 years or so.
You know, that's probably the understatement.
All right, Mike, listen, we only have a few seconds left. So I want to thank you for coming on. Gave some great, great information. If anyone wants to get in touch with him, it's Mike Hammond at PICOR. We'll be back next week where your money matters. Remember, Natalie's doing a retirement seminar this week on Thursday. And be safe, be profitable, and be happy this week. We'll see you next week.